is WRT 89.9 FM in Madison, Wisconsin.
Do you have an insatiable curiosity about the world? Do you find yourself provoking conversations with your friends and coworkers? Are you a strong listener? Then you should consider applying to become the next host of A Public Affair, WORT's daily hour-long call-in talk program. We're now accepting applications for this volunteer position. The next host will be the voice of Tuesday's show and join a stellar lineup of folks who engage listeners in conversations on social, cultural, and political issues of importance every day of the week. We're looking for someone who is curious and well-informed, comfortable speaking on air, someone who can think on their feet, and has at least 5 hours a week to prepare and host the show. And of
course, hello, I'm Govinda Gill with the BBC News. President Trump has launched a new scathing attack on the head of the U.S. Central Bank, Jerome Powell. He called for what he described his termination. Here's our business reporter, Jonathan Josephs.
It was during President Trump's first term that he picked Jerome Powell to run the U.S. Central Bank, making him one of the global economy's most influential figures. Despite that, he's long been critical of Mr. Powell's policies and has now said his termination cannot come fast enough. The president wants the Federal Reserve to cut the cost of borrowing, something which typically fuels economic growth. However, the Fed's twin mandate is to keep prices stable and people in jobs, and on Wednesday, Mr. Powell renewed warnings that tariffs would push prices up for American consumers. He's previously said the president doesn't have the legal power to fire him.
The Chinese President Xi Jinping has urged Cambodia to resist trade protectionism in an apparent reference to Donald Trump's tariff policies. Mr. Xi said China and Cambodia should oppose external forces that sowed discord. Volodymyr Zelensky has called on Ukraine's allies to put more pressure on Russia to end the war. He posted his message on social media just as the US Secretary of State Marco Rubio and Envoy Steve Witkoff sat down in Paris for peace talks with European leaders. Here's our Paris correspondent, Hugh Schofield.
Very little has been communicated about the agenda, but the Europeans will clearly be interested to hear in person the latest from Steve Witkoff, the man entrusted by President Trump to negotiate with Vladimir Putin. Earlier this week, Mr. Witkoff said that after his last talks with the Russian leader, he thought a deal on Ukraine might be emerging soon. The Europeans are certainly sceptical about that, but the British and French will want to convince the Americans that their plans to deploy a kind of reassurance force after an eventual ceasefire need to be part of the plan.
One of the most senior figures in the Russian army has been sentenced to 7 years in a penal colony after pleading guilty to charges of corruption. Vadim Shamarin embezzled nearly $500,000 while serving as deputy head of the Army General Staff. Our Europe regional editor Paul Moss reports.
Another day, another senior figure falls foul of Vladimir Putin's effort to crack down on corruption. Vadim Shamarin was in charge of the Army's Signal Corps and used that role to sign artificially inflated contracts for communication equipment. But this was just the latest in a slew of scandals. It was only on Wednesday that the former governor of Russia's Kursk region was arrested, accused of siphoning off money that was supposed to be spent building defence structures. Mr. Shamarin's lawyers say he's prepared to fight in Ukraine in return for avoiding his prison sentence.
You're listening to the latest world news from the BBC.
Che Quartet at the North Street Cabaret on Friday, April 25th at 8 p.m. Jimmy Ferrace's recent debut album, Hours Fly, Flowers Die, is a heartfelt narrative with themes of nostalgia and the passage of time. More information and tickets are available at bluestemjazz.org.
Attention WORT volunteers and donors. WORT is holding an election for two open participating member seats and one open listener sponsor seat to serve three-year terms on the board of directors of Back Porch Radio Broadcasting, Inc., with terms beginning at the annual meeting in June and concluding at the annual meeting in June 2028. Financial acumen, computer literacy, and a willingness to work within a dynamic group to help shape this great station are all desirable qualifications. People of underrepresented groups are strongly encouraged to apply. Some committee hours are required outside of board meetings. Applications must be received by 5 p.m. on Thursday, May 15th to ensure consideration. Voting begins Thursday, May 29th and continues until the annual meeting on Sunday, June 29th. More information and board applications are available at wardfm.org or on paper in the station lobby. Help us keep WORT a vibrant and important part of our community. Apply today. Support for this program is provided by WORT's listener sponsors and the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers Local 2304. Local 2304 is a small local union with a big agenda, bringing power to the people by representing the workers who provide safe and reliable gas and electric service at MG&E. The professional union reps at Madison Teachers Incorporated and the staff collective right here at WORT. More information about the union is available on their website at ibew2304.com.
Good morning, it's 8:07 and you are tuned into WORT 89.9 FM in Madison, Wisconsin, your listener-sponsored community radio station. My name's Tony Castaneda, and it's time for the Thursday, April 17th, 2025 edition of the 8 o'clock buzz. Joining me in the studio, he's here, live. Eli, how's it going?
Alive and in person.
How'd it go last week in Las Vegas, man?
Well, you know how Vegas goes. It's sometimes you make money, sometimes you lose money. Sometimes you...
How did you do?
You know how Vegas goes. It's always one of those two options.
Well, which one did you...
Yeah, one of them. I did one of those things. I either won money or I lost money. And I'm not, you know, I don't know if it's important to report which one it actually happened, but...
It depends on what you mean by money.
Yeah, you know, exactly. It's all fake at this point. You know, I think, let's say the casinos put some good tariffs on my bank account, and that's what happened.
There you go. It was bound to happen. You got a big show tonight. I guess let's talk about it right now because you're doing something at the Working Draft Brewery.
Yeah,
tonight,
we are down at the Working Draft Beer Company. We do our monthly comedy show. I'm excited about it. This should be a fun one. I got two friends of mine, Hayden Fredrickson, Jack Hazley. They are both filming specials in a month or so, and so they're kind of in their last run of trying to polish their material before they go film their specials. So they're both co-headlining tonight. So if you want to get a little preview of what their specials are going to be, come check us out at the Working Draft Beer Company.
Where are those guys from?
They're both, I met them both up in the Fox Valley, so they both live in Appleton originally. Jack moved to Milwaukee probably about 2-3 months ago, mm-hmm. And Hayden still is up there in Appleton. So,
all right.
But two Wisconsin killers, guys that have been doing comedy for a real long time.
Now, when they film it, I mean, what do they do with it then? Where does it go?
Yeah, so, I mean, it's real interesting where comedy has
Porn
kind of
hub
changed.
Or what? No, I'm kidding.
I don't know. I'm sure you know. I'm sure there's some similarities in the music industry, but it used to be... You make a deal with, you know, one of the networks or the companies or one of these production companies, and they give you money, and then you go out and you produce your, you know, your album or produce your special, and then they, you know, they go find a place for it. Now, everything is independent. So they're basically, their strategy is you self-produce it, you film it, you make it look real nice, then you start shopping it around, hopefully try to pick up, send it to Netflix, send it to Hulu, send it to all these big video places. Hopefully one of them picks it up. If one of them doesn't pick it up, you put it on YouTube and you hope for the best.
Then you're famous.
Yeah, exactly. And YouTube's been huge. I mean, I think a lot of people discredit it because it is self-publishing, but mm-hmm. a lot of good people get their start. It's kind of...
That's how the kids are doing. That's how the funny kids are doing it.
It's the place
these days.
Yeah. So hopefully they get picked up by some distribution company. There's a lot of good production companies. There's production companies who even just put it out on YouTube. It will help you promote it.
All right.
But
that's cool. Hey, before I forget, I've been forgetting to pay you. Here's your newspaper.
Oh, my payment. Anything in there? Hopefully something good.
Here's your carrot bread.
The Brewers
from the co-op. Yeah, and here's your banana.
And look, it's ripe.
Nice. Oh, man. Co-op stepping up their game.
They came through.
They decided to have edible bananas. Game.
After receiving so many complaints from me.
I sent it to the board of directors, and they finally got down to you.
All right. We do have a show today, and we'll be speaking. First of all, we're going to be speaking with Karen Romo from Bolsas de la Frontera, from the Madison branch here. In case you didn't know, next Friday, May 1st, May Day, May 2nd, I believe, there will be a huge march and a calling together of everyone here. A day without immigrants, of course, needed more than anything. That's going to be a week from tomorrow. And also on May Day itself, May 1st, there's going to be a huge march and rally in Milwaukee also. So 2 days of days without immigrants, if you will. And we'll be talking about that. And they're having a fundraiser to help fund buses and transportation and stuff to the march in Milwaukee. We'll be talking about that, amongst other things. And then we'll also be speaking with WRT's own Carlos Davalos and many issues, including a seminar he put on recently regarding the Latinization of U.S. politics. That's what I got. Eli, what do you got?
The views and opinions expressed on the Thursday 8 o'clock buzz do not necessarily represent the opinions of the Wart paid staff, its board of directors, or our billions of volunteers. The Thursday 8 o'clock buzz is for entertainment purposes only.
So there. All right. There you have it, everyone. Thank you very much for tuning in. In a minute, we'll be speaking with Karen Romo from Bolsas de la Frontera.
No tiene lugar.
It's 8:13, and you are tuned into the Thursday Buzz here on WORT. Joining me on the line, I'm very pleased to have Karen Romo. She's a member of the Madison chapter of Bolsas de la Frontera, which is one of the largest immigrants' rights groups and movements in the country. Karen, good morning.
Hi, good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
All right. Well, I did mention a little earlier that there's going to be two marches again right around May Day, on May 1st in Milwaukee, and then on May 2nd there's going to be one here Can you talk a little bit about the days without immigrants and the purpose for these rallies and marches?
Yes, of course. So we have our May Day, which is going to be held in Milwaukee. Some of the demands include stopping from the AB 24, which we know would allow sheriffs and law enforcement to work together for people that have been held and have been incarcerated in the jail. And what we know, the jail, people have been incarcerated for minor infractions, meaning that you can get deported, you can get transferred to an immigration center if you're on a jail, since those records are going to be public for law enforcement. So those are some of the things that we've been fighting for. But then on May 2nd, it's going to be held in Dane County, in Madison, to be exact, at the Capitol. We have a march happening at Rivingham Park starting at 3. And then some of the things that we're demanding there is driver's license for all. We know that that's something that people with unauthorized residence in the United States or in Wisconsin don't have. And we know that if you get stopped more than twice, that can lead to criminal charges. So that's something that both of us have also been fighting for. That's something that we're also going to be protesting against, just providing this driver licenses for everybody in the state, no matter their current resident status. We're also demanding for accessible education. We know that with affirmative action being revoked, there's been a high need for certain groups of individuals to be able to access higher education. We've seen a decrease on minorities being able to afford and actually attend universities across the state. So that's something that we're fighting for. And again, just the IB24 that I've talked about. If you guys have any questions, you can just reach out to me, reach out to VOCES, and then we'll be able to provide more information about those as well. In regards to the fundraising, you can access our website, VOCESBDLF.org, and then you can click donate if you'd like to donate for us. Some of the things that we've been doing is gathering this fund to get buses, so people from around Wisconsin can attend these rallies and these marches. Mm-hmm. We know that without driver's licenses, it's been one has to be very cautious about where one can and cannot go. So that's something that we're also trying to work on to make it accessible for everybody to attend those rallies, no matter their status.
Mm-hmm. Now, Karen, a couple months ago, I was interviewing someone from VOCES right at the start of the Trump administration, and we were talking about ICE activity in the state of Wisconsin. And at that time, it appeared that there were no reports of any ICE activity that is picking people up and deporting them or sending them to a detention center. Since that time, it appears that there has been a lot of ICE activity. Can you talk about what's going on in the state of Wisconsin and maybe even closer to home? What kind of things are happening right here in Madison?
Yeah, I mean, we do have a confidentiality policy, so I'm not going to be able to go into a lot of detail about the cases. But one thing that I can say is that cases have been fluctuating a lot, meaning that they're not in, for example, the month of January, we had as many as 100 calls, and then it's been fluctuating from now and then, depending on elections, depending on what has been happening locally and also statewide. Well, yeah, we've been able to corroborate ICE attempted searches, and in some cases resulting in arrests in Wood County, Brown County, Whitewater, and Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So,
yeah, I know for confidentiality purposes, you don't have to say names or anything like that, but how many people in the state of Wisconsin, not counting the students on the UW campuses who've had their visas revoked? I mean, is this a daily occurrence now in the city of Madison and Milwaukee or what, in terms of people being detained or stopped and questioned by ICE authorities?
Yeah, I mean, we have an emergency line, and some of the things that we've been able to track is that we at least get 1 to 2 calls every day. Our line is 24/7. And I mean, some of the emergencies that are considered an emergency, I come to detention. Okay. So right now, we've only seen around 2 per day, around 7 per week or more than that. But again, it fluctuates a lot. We only have seen a few that are joke calls. It's been fluctuating a lot, and it's, some of them start as eye sightings and then they quickly turn into an eye's attention. So it's particularly important for us to be able to corroborate and then to be able to send out people to verify the situation so we can actually share that information with the public or share that information with their networks so they can mobilize the people that could be affected.
If people are witnessing ICE activity, is there something you would like the public to do? Is there a hotline? Is there somewhere that they can call to report the ICE activity going on?
Yes, we actually have a hotline. And then our hotline number is 414-465-8078.
I'm going to say that again. That was 414-465-8078. Is that the number, the hotline number?
Correct.
Okay.
Yes, correct. Yes, and you can call if you're witnessing eye sighting, if you think that someone could be eyes. You can just call this number, and then an operator will be there to assist you. Again, this hotline is 24/7, mm-hmm. Meaning that you can call at any time, at any point, and someone will be there to answer your call.
Okay. I know you guys are passing out cards to a lot of people. What are the steps that people should do if somebody's out there listening right now and ICE decides to detain them? What are the steps and what's the legality of that? And what do you encourage people to do if they're in that situation?
Okay. I mean, if someone were to be stopped, the first thing they have to determine is whether or not it's a legal stop, meaning that they have a reasonable reason why the person has been stopped. So just determining that is first step. We know that when you get stopped, you get asked about your documentation. So it's better to just not lie, to not offer any fake documents that you might have. So some of the things that we've been advising people is just exercising your right to remain silent. This is not just a right that citizens have, but people that live in the United States. So that's something that we've also been advising people. Just notify the officer that you wish to remain silent. Don't run, don't resist, comply as much as you can. If you run, we know that everything that you do, everything that you say could and will be taken against you in the court of law. Mm-hmm. So that's something that we don't want. We don't want additional charges. At the time that you're arrested, if you were to be arrested, do not sign any document. We know that a lot of people don't necessarily feel comfortable with the language English. Just know that you have the right for an interpreter and you have the right to an attorney. However, not appointed by the state, you can get one pro bono or a low-cost attorney. And if you're being taken to a center of immigration or if you're being taken to a jail, you have a right to a phone call. So you can call someone that you trust. You can call someone that could be there for you and that can find an attorney mm-hmm. that I can assist you throughout the steps. But if you're not being arrested, just know that you have the right to record. You have the right to document everything that's been happening. However, don't aggravate the situation, meaning that you're not going to be super close to the face of the officer, just notifying them that you're going to start recording. If he's trying to stop you, they can't do that legally unless you're arrested. Once you get arrested, it means that you cannot do certain things that you would because you're you're in the possession of of the agent.
Now, some people have been stopped by what they would describe it, and we've seen videos of it, of unmarked officers. I mean, they don't even identify themselves one way or the other. And we know in those situations that, I mean, for the most part, you should just say, hey, who are you? Do you have a right to demand identification from the authorities, first of all? And second of all, if they do show you, yes, I'm with ICE or whatever, and give you the ID and all that, and are you required to give them your name?
Yeah, good question. So for the first one, just know that law enforcement can lie, meaning that they can wear other suits. We've seen a lot of a lot of ICE agents that just wear a regular police suit, and it's just an intimidation tactic that we've been seeing on and off. You have the right to request identification. However, some officers do not provide that identification. So if you were to get arrested, if you were to want to press charges, I'm not a lawyer, so I cannot provide any legal aid. Mm-hmm. But that's just something that you could do, that you could talk to with a lawyer. I mean, if you have any questions, if you're encountering something like that, we do have an attorney at BOSIS, and that's something that we could refer her to, just for a quick legal aid meeting. And then for the second one, you said if they provide the badge, if they have identified themselves, can they request this identification from you, correct?
Yes.
So the answer is that they have to have probable cause or reasonable suspicion, meaning reasonable suspicion is that they think that you have something in your persona that could be criminalized. Mm-hmm. And due process is that they know for a fact that you have something in you, in your premises, that are that could be considered against that could be taken against you in a court of law. If they don't have those two things, they cannot ask for identification. If you're in public, that means that your rights gradually just decrease, meaning that they can just have probable suspicion. They can just stop you, and then if they notify that to you, if they make that clear that they think that you have something in you, they can ask for your identification, and you have to provide that. But now if you're in your house, if you're in your premises, they need to have a warrant. They need to have a judicial warrant that has been signed by a judge or a magistrate. If they don't have that, if it's not a legitimate one, they don't have the right to.
And you also don't have to let them in. So you can talk to them through the door, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And
you
which
don't
is
have to let them in.
All right. And so you guys recommend not to open the door, actually, right?
Do not open the door. If they claim to have a judicial warrant, you can ask them to slide it under the door. Take a picture from both sides. Take a picture of all the pages that this warrant may have, and then just slide it back out. Otherwise, you can also ask them to place it against the window. Again, just take pictures of like all the pages that you can, and then just like reassuring, and then just confirming that it's actually a judicial warrant. There is other types of warrants, such as arrest warrant, deportation warrant. If they have an arrest warrant or a deportation warrant, they can add into your house. Just one thing, don't open the door, because at the time that you open the door, you're providing consent. So let's say they have a deportation warrant and the person is in the house, technically they have to come out. So one thing that they can do is just come out and close the door behind them, because at the point that you close the door, you're closing that consent.
Mm-hmm. What about the search and seizure of your vehicle?
Again, they need to have either like a judicial warrant, because technically it's also some of your premises, or they can have reasonable suspicion and or probable cause.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I mean, like, well, I know if you got pulled over and say there was an open alcohol container in the car,
right?
Then they could say, all right, then they have probable cause to search your car or something, or if they see something there that's illegal, Then they do have probable cause to search your vehicle. But other than that, you can refuse to let them search your vehicle, right?
You can, yeah. But then that would be like everything will be documented. So that could potentially be taken against you in the court of law. However, we do advise people to just not let them search their cars because for what we know, they can plant stuff. They can claim that they've seen that they found certain evidence that it's not that could not be true. They can forge the evidence. So yeah, just saying no, it's a little bit better. Just to make sure that nothing erroneous, nothing that you didn't have in your persona is taken against you.
Right. Now these rules, and the reason I'm saying that is that these pertain to everybody. So even if you're not brown. Right. Or Latina, or you know, what have you, these rules apply to everyone. That is one of the things that's been happening with some of these ICE detainments is that they will get access to a house for the person they're looking for, but then they're like, oh, while we were there, we found, you know, four other people that were undocumented, so we swept them all up. What about that?
Sorry, can you say that again?
Well, you know, what they have a search warrant for a certain individual. They get access to the house or they get that person, and then they say, oh, while we were there, we found a bunch of other people that were undocumented. You know, what should people do in those situations?
I mean, one of the things that, I mean, let's say they do have a judicial warrant, or let's say the person has provided consent. So one of the things that people could do is that they can exit the premises even before ICE agents arrive to the scene, or like at when they're at the door. If they have a back door or something, they can just exit the premises through that, because technically a judicial warrant is only trying to access your premises. Mm-hmm. It's trying to access your house to make sure that you don't have anything illegal. In there, so that's something they could do. But if at the time that they have been given consent, or at the time that a person has confirmed that that judicial warrant is legitimate, then everything that is inside of that house could be asked to be identified. So yeah, that's.
And I guess if you are in that house, you could also refuse to speak with them and say, hey, you know, I'm not compliant or whatever. And I would like to remind our listeners that neither Karen Romo from Voices or myself are lawyers, so we're not really giving out any, this is not legal advice. It's like gestures.
This is just something that we've seen.
Okay.
But if you want legal counsel or something, you can contact us. You can contact a pro bono attorney and then just have a quick meeting with them. Just write down all your questions that you might have. Just so he can get better assistance.
Right, and that's why you have that hotline. I guess I could call the Voices hotline also, which is 20. Okay, so thank you very much, Karen. Again, Voces de la Frontera's got two big activities. Thursday of next week, May 1st, and also Friday, May 2nd, Thursday in Milwaukee, and Friday right here in Madison. If you would like to help out, if you can't do anything right now other than possibly give some money or whatever, you can go to the Voces website, which is, what is that again, Karen? VCLS?
VDLS.org.
All right. And you can donate to help the cause. Karen, I want to thank you very much for being on the show this morning.
Thank you so much.
Okay. There you have it. Eli? I don't know. Going on any road trips?
Am I going on road trips? Not anytime soon, man.
I'm
staying here.
I am going on one, and I'm a little concerned about it, man.
Oh, yeah?
So,
but you're going
driving out to Boston.
Oh, yeah.
But who knows?
What are you going
out to Boston? So if I'm not here next week, you know what happened.
I heard you.
I'll be in El Salvador somewhere.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I heard. I'm more worried about you collapsing because I heard you're running the Boston Marathon.
Not me. My son is. Yeah, no, I'll be fine. I may be. I don't know. If La Migra is after me, maybe I will be running at Boston Marathon. You'll see. Like all right, hold on, everybody. It's 8:34. In a minute, we're going to get to a good friend, Carlos Dávalos. All right. Eli, is that okay? Let's move on here.
Let's do it.
Cada día que me enamoro. Vecina del cuarto, de la panadera, de la que vende los billetes en el metro, de la barrendera, cada día que me enamoro.
Tú la vecina del patio, yo nunca te dejaría. Tú mi vecina de arriba, por ti yo me descabrizaría. Viva tú, viva tú, la Marelu, viva tú. Viva tú, viva tú, viva tú, la Marelu, viva tú. Tú mi vecina en lo alto, tú la del séptimo cielo. Mi vecina en la esquina, me alegro cuando te veo. Viva tú, viva tú, viva tú, la Marelu, viva tú. Viva tú, viva tú, viva tú, la Marelu, viva tú.
Y tú, y tú, y tú, viva tú.
Tú mi vecina en lo alto, tú la del séptimo cielo. Tú mi vecina de arriba, me alegro cuando te veo.
Cada día que me enamoro,
se enamora.
Esto me representa, es así. Pásame el WAP que me hago el vinilo. Esto me representa. Cada día que me enamoro.
Viva tú, viva tú,
viva tú,
viva tú, la Marelu, viva tú. Viva tú, viva tú,
viva tú,
viva tú, la Marelu,
viva la Marelu,
viva tú,
viva tú, y tú, y tú, y tú. Cada día que me enamoro. Viva tú, y tú, y tú, viva tú, viva tú.
Nobody come to visit my heavens today. Nobody come to visit my heavens today.
It's 8:37, and you are tuned in to the Thursday 8 o'clock buzz here on WORT. Joining me in the studio, I'm very pleased to have Carlos Dávalos. You might know Carlos. He's been working as one of our paid staff here. He's our Spanish language programming staff member here, where he produces, records, engineers, does everything in terms of assisting with WRT's outreach to the Spanish-speaking community, amongst other things. He's also a well-known reporter from Mexico City. He's here in Madison as a PhD candidate in the journalism mass communication department at the UW, and he has a J-1 visa, and I wanted to talk to Carlos because as anyone who knows has been paying attention in that last interview that we did, we're living in some very strange and potentially dangerous period right now, and here on the UW campuses, close to, 36 or so students have had their J-1 visas revoked are done. Carlos, first of all, good morning. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Tony. Thanks for having me.
Did I get that right?
You did, yeah. J1, F1, people that have, that hold these visas, these documents are mostly, obviously, meant to say people from other places, international students, in all university levels, undergrad, graduate students too, like myself. And it's been a little nerve-wracking, yes.
So, do you feel that the heat has been turned up, though, even more just in the last week and a half, or what? I mean, what were you thinking? How are you feeling now that you saw that these UW students right here in Madison have had their visas revoked?
Well, I mean, you know, it's we try to stay focused, we try to stay busy, but there's not a pattern that we can understand or follow to understand what's going on, or what is the what are the justifications behind all of these.
Now the Madison situations. Judge here in the case, I guess Judge Conley. He just had a ruling the other day that one of the students affected here, it's in today's paper, I'm pretty sure.
Yes, April 15th, prevented an order from the Department of Homeland Security from revoking the student visa of Krish Lau Isardansani, who was an undergraduate student at UW.
Yes.
Does it say where he's from? You know him?
I don't know him personally. I know he's 21. I know that he... A student
from India.
From India.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I know him and his lawyer have done amazing work, and the reasons behind, my editor here and I were talking about this yesterday, and the reasons are pretty simple. Just, you know, a really basic altercation at a restaurant or a bar or something like that.
Right, the situation, they got into an argument with another group of guys after a Saturday night out on town, downtown.
Something very, you know, something that happens in a place like this.
And the charges were dropped.
Yes.
Dane County District Attorney declined to charge in the case and never appeared in court.
But his name supposedly the incident itself happened, and that's how he was tagged by ICE. Do we know or what?
I mean, that's what the reporting is saying. That's what also the Cardinal, the Daily Cardinal, the student-led newspaper at the university also is reporting on that case with a lot of detail,
mm-hmm.
And that's the basic information that we have right now.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I mean, I hate to make you feel scared or paranoid, but how are you feeling overall?
Well, I mean, you know, like I was saying before, we are trying to stay focused. We're trying to do the work. And there is a level of nervousness, I guess. But in general, we are just, you know, here doing the work, doing academic work in my case, journalism or reporting work in my activities here at WORT, and trying to stay focused. You know, there's nothing else we can do right now.
Right, I guess. And I totally understand. And I could also see how it would be somewhat distracting to be worried about that all the time. Okay, all right. Now, you held a seminar recently, or you were involved with a seminar, helped produce it, dealing with the issue of the Latinization of U.S. politics. Can you talk a little bit about what that was all about?
Yeah, it was a really interesting week, a month ago or something, where we had precisely scholars from Mexico coming here and talk about what's going on between the relationship with politicians and media people, media owners, and how that has shifted from what was a pretty healthy relationship in the past to something that has moved to certain extremes, ideological extremes.
Here in the United States Mexico?
No, in the United States. Okay. In Mexico, it's something that has been happening for some time, you know, and the relationship between political spheres and political people and people that own media groups, media conglomerates, has been the case for decades. And it's something that was not necessarily the case in the United States, but now in the past few years, we see that relationship being much more stronger. We you know, you see now the word oligarchy being thrown around a lot more. It's becoming a pretty mainstream word now. And that's, in a sense, what that means, you know, that the relationship between people that own, I would say, new forms of media, not the traditional, or also the traditional forms of media, and politicians have a much more closer relationship, and I would definitely qualify it as toxic, you know, as something that has swung to ideological, you know, ideological extremes, ideological positions that are on the right, you know, on the right, and that has been, you know, we could say that before the politicians were not talking directly to citizens. They were saying they had a message. The media in the middle would pick up that message, filter it, or use editorial processes to communicate that to an audience. But now they're sidestepping that you know, the whole media aspect, and just using it as a direct channel to talk to citizens. And that, I think, is what these people are calling the Latinization of American politics, and using the same same language as regular people. Also, the not necessarily the good aspects, you know, or everything, I guess, that people on the street use in terms of language. And that's also one of the reasons why we are starting to also use the word populist, you know. So that, I think, it's what in a sense explains just the relationship between media and politicians. That's what I can speak for.
Bukele, the president of El Salvador, I don't know if you've been following him so much, but I was really surprised to find out that this is the guy that's running the prisons where, Eli, they're going to send you in El Salvador. He is a former member of the FMLN, the Farabundo Martí Liberation Army Front, in El Salvador, which was the leftist rebels that were fighting the oligarchy back in the late 70s and the 80s. And then here he is. He's a good friend with Trump now. How can you... I don't know if you have any comments on...
I mean, you know...
That contradiction there.
Yeah, I follow... I've been following him and his rise to power, I guess, in El Salvador. And also, I follow everyday Mexican politics. And that's a name that, in the context of Mexican politics, has been thrown around a lot, because he used really, really extreme anti-human methods to propose a social solution for violence, organized crime, organized violence in the form of gangs, which is what, in a way, identifies just a certain section of El Salvadorian society. We have to be very specific about that, because it's not the entire country, it's not the entire El Salvadorian society. It's just certain very specific little spheres, segments, you know, segments, yes. So he went down the very, very anti-human route of just swiping everything, everyone, and putting them in really big prison complexes.
Did he initially run from the left?
I don't know with detail his personal history. I don't know exactly, but now he directly identifies with far right Latin American politics.
Okay.
And that's why he's having a direct dialogue with the president here, and also presidents in the far right in other Latin American countries, like Brazil, Argentina, and other places, no?
Right, right. What about Sheinbaum, the president of Mexico? You've been following Mexican politics. What about this dynamic now? Here she is. She appears to be a pretty a brilliant woman. I mean, she's smart. She seems to be saying the right things. Of course, you know, that's Donald Trump's worst nightmare is a very strong, intelligent woman. What do you think is going to happen with this dynamic with her?
I think she's been, like you just said, pretty smart or strategic in the way she's been approaching or dealing with the Trump, northern country bully, you know.
Yes.
And she's a scientist. She's a science trained woman with a PhD in very, very hard STEM fields. And it's really interesting. As I probably, you know, and people listening know, Mexico and Latin America has a strong culturally Catholic leaning, or you know, and she is a member of the Mexican Jewish community, and she's a Mexican Jewish woman that just recognized Palestina as a state, you know, so that also speaks about where she's standing in terms of international politics. In terms of the relationship with the United States, I think she has been very vocal about cooperating and about having a constant dialogue with the administration here, and not letting interfere directly in Mexican soil and Mexican politics, Mexican exchange. And she has set the tone and set the pace in terms of how to deal with the administration here. I remember when the first conversations around tariffs started to happen just between the three North American countries, Mexico, United States, and Canada. I remember there was a Monday in which she had the first phone call with the White House here at 8 a.m., and she set the tone for what was going to happen hours later between Canada and the United States. And it was because of her and because of the conversation that she had with the White House here that Canadians were able to also pause
the tariffs.
The tariffs, okay. Yes. Yeah. You know, so she's been setting the tone literally with how to deal with the administration.
What about her popularity in Mexico?
It's divided. It's divided. You know, the Mexico does have, like I just said with El Salvador, we cannot generalize what's going on in Mexico in terms of organized crime. The narrative here, the mainstream narrative here, says that Mexico has an entire issue with
that the whole country's run by the gangsters.
Yeah, yes. Which is definitely not true. If you follow anything that has to do with serious information about Mexico, you'll see that that's not true. However, you know, after saying that, it is true that there is certain sections of the country, of the society, that have issues with organized crime. And she is, I think, doing things completely different from her predecessor, Andrés Manuel López Obrador, AMLO, a pretty famous Mexican politician that had a really relaxed, I think, policy against that. And she's been directly focusing on changing that and being way more proactive, you know, and establishing more, I'm just going to say a different approach to crime. There's been results. There's been also conversations between the United States and Mexico in terms of exchanges, you know, in terms of sending drug lords that have had an interference with the United States or that have some kind of presence in American states.
Right.
But she's also been really clear about the order in which these things should happen, you know. Like she said, I'm going to use my own words, but she has said, before coming into my house and asked me to clean my house, clean yours first.
Yes.
You know, there's reports from American agencies that say that there is clear a verifiable presence of organized crime in at least 35 states in the United States. So why don't you clean house first and then, you know, worry
about
everyone
else? Not to mention, you know, the White House is saying, hey, keep the fentanyl out of here. And she says, keep the guns out of Mexico. Now, a lot of people don't know that guns, for the most part, and assault rifles and that, they're illegal in the whole country of Mexico, right? You have very strict gun control laws in Mexico.
Yeah.
But then all we hear about and see on TV is these violent armed cartels, you know, driving around with impunity and whatever. And everybody's like, everybody thinks that's what Mexico's about. But all that weaponry comes from the United States, right?
Correct. And that's also American agencies confirming that. There's, again, reports from American agencies saying that at least, 75-80% of the guns that are used in Mexico come from American dealers, you know, dealers. And so that's something that the United States can do too. And also, going back to what you just said about the fentanyl, that is important to, it's important to clarify that that started in the United States as well, you know, and the demand is in the United States, and the whole pharma industry from decades started doing that, and then, you know, the suppliers moved, but it started here too. So it's important to also, you know, understand how things happen historically in terms of, again, verifiable evidence, verifiable history.
Carlos Davalos, I want to thank you very much. And also, I think it was, I guess it's courageous of you to come out and speak, because you know that the U.S. government listens to the Thursday Buzz all the time, Eli, even though we have that disclaimer there. But I mean, just possibly your appearance here talking politics is something that could be construed, at least in a Trump or White House mind, as going against the interests of this country. So I want to thank you very much for doing what you're doing here. And also, I've seen and worked with you on some things here at the studio. And I just want to commend you and say it's very important that you're here. And it's also good to get that perspective and also know what's going on in Mexico.
Well, thanks so much, dear Tony. And if something happens, then we know why it happened.
Well, who's going to go first, me or you? We'll see. Carlos Davalos, again.
Thanks for having me, Tony.
Sure. Thanks for being here. It's 8:57, and we're going to wind down in a bit. But what the heck? Let's, you know, let's play some more music.
El modelo para la conformación del Área de Libre Comercio de las Américas proviene del Tratado de Libre Comercio de América del Norte, el famoso NAFTA en inglés o TLCAN en español.
El ALCA fue lanzado en 1994.
Desde Alaska hasta Tierra del Fuego.
En la primera cumbre de las Américas.
¡Protesto contra el ALCA!
No al ALCA.
Resistencia contra el ALCA.
Expreso rechazo al ALCA. Difundirlo y denunciarlo, buscando la brecha, haciendo lo que dé lugar que falta.
Preservar las aguas de los ríos de la lógica del lucro. No al ALCA. No a la OMC. No al Imperio Norteamericano.
Resistencia.
Interrumpir las negociaciones. Bloqueos de rutas de acceso a la ciudad.
No al ALCA. La OMC, no al Imperio Norteamericano.
Interrumpir las negociaciones. Bloqueos de rutas de acceso a la ciudad.
El ALCA.
Lo que permite consolidar la presencia del capital transnacional.
Say 58, everyone. Thank you very much for tuning in to the Thursday Buzz. I want to thank my guest, Karen Romo from Voces de la Frontera. Again, we have that hotline number, 414-465-8078. If you see anything happening out there, speak up. And also, Carlos Davalos here from the Ward staff. Eli, thank you very much, man.
Hey, good show today, Tony.
Hey, good luck on your show tonight.
Good luck running the Boston.
All right, yeah. Hope I don't get stopped and pulled over. Stay tuned for Hajira with very special guest Ankur Malhotra, and he's going to be playing all of Alice's Restaurant. This is WRT 89.9 FM in Madison, Wisconsin.
Las calles contra el alca, contra el alca. Desde Alaska hasta Tierra del Fuego.
Movilizaciones contra el alca.
Nobody come to visit my heavens today. There is no devil to visit my heavens today.
This is the Insurgent Radio Kiosk for Thursday, April 17th.
This is Bird Note. Every spring, one of the most musical and complex bird songs on the continent rings forth from the sagebrush of the Columbia Basin in Washington State. The Brewer's Sparrow, a migratory songbird that winters mostly in western Mexico, returns in April to the sage. Sagebrush habitat, often called shrub steppe, is a common landscape of the interior West. However, each year, more and more of it is being cleared for irrigated crops and development. The diminutive Brewer's Sparrow shares its nesting habitat with other fancy singers, like the long-winded sage thrasher and the melodic Vesper Sparrow. All three of these birds are sandy brown in color, blending so seamlessly with their surroundings that only a sharp eye can pick them out. Yet even among this accomplished company, the Brewer's song stands apart. While most birds offer a melody, the Brewer's Sparrow seems to perform an entire aria.